My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to our Big Book 12-Step Workshop. Please join me in prayer for an open mind and open heart. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 steps, and you, for an open mind and a new experience of myself, my brokenness, the 12 steps, and especially you. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Tonight, I'm inviting you to think about whether you have a question or a comment or something that you would like to share, connected to the first step, connected to the body, connected to the experience of what happened when you took the first fill in the blank. Is that a drink? Is that a drug? Is that a food bite? Is that a thought? Is that a feeling? Is that a memory? Is that an action? Whether it's a substance or process, the outcome is going to be the same. And it's not about the outcome of a blackout or of going to jail or of a failed relationship or a firing or going to jail. No, that's not the outcome. Not here. It is, of course, with addiction, but here in this particular very narrow focus, we're looking at the first step, but we're looking at the first half of the first step, as I've mentioned many times, and I don't want to create any sophistication or undue confusion. We're looking at addiction. We're looking at the problem in the first half of the first step. The big book says, step one, admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Dash. That's the first half of the first step. And we're parsing even that first half into two parts. The doctor's opinion said there's a problem with the body and a problem with the mind. He's a psychiatrist, so that's a medical doctor with a psychiatric degree. Of course, he's going to look at both parts, but quite frankly, he only gives us a commentary and an opinion on the body part. He makes very little reference other than the word to the mind problem. We will unpack the mind assignment beginning next week. I've given you that. Just to remind you, it's assignment four, looking at pages 23 to 43, but I'm even cutting that into half, looking at pages 23 to 35, right around page 33, 34, something like that, and doing items number one and items number two in the assignment four, so that you're looking up the words delusion, illusion, obsession, and insanity, and writing out your at least understanding from a dictionary. Not just your understanding, please. That might be interesting to you, but it's not to me. What I'm looking for you to get really clear from a dictionary, and I don't mean any type of a recovery dictionary. I find those very inadequate. I use a professional commercial dictionary to look up those words so that we get a very clear idea. Now, we'll talk about our experience, our knowledge, our even our opinions about it, but I want the baseline of a formal commercial professional definition. It's critical important. Bill says this problem of the mind is the crux of the problem. The body is a problem, but it's not if you don't start. The body is a problem. The allergy and craving is a problem. But it's not a problem if you don't start. So obviously the real question is, well, why do you start? And we'll address that in depth as we do most everything. We'll take a look at the spiritual malady, that part after the dash, the unmanageability, in 2 or 3 weeks after we finish the mind work. The body work is important, but the mind work is more important. And the unmanageability work is the critical part. Bill says in many places in the big book that alcohol is not the problem. No, no, just, you know, keep your socks on. Addiction is a problem. It's just not the problem. It's the symptom of the problem, the symbol of the problem. And Bill uses in the big book those two words to describe alcohol, a symbol and a symptom of a malady. Now, he calls it a spiritual malady. I'll give it other names as we look at it, so that it's a broad net of the human problem. Addiction is the addict's problem. Only a percentage of human beings in the world are addicts. But all human beings are human beings, and they have the malady of unmanageability. We'll take a look at that. Tonight, we're just looking at this. The body that has a defect. Dr. Silkworth calls it an allergy. Oh, no, no. He actually says it's an opinion that it looks like. He's a medical doctor. Of course, he's going to look at medical evidence. And he says, once you start, you cannot stop. And he calls that phenomenon craving. Please get it really clear. Craving isn't your thought. Craving isn't your feeling. Craving isn't your memory. Craving isn't your desire. That's craving in the commercial dictionary, indeed. But the big book uses the word craving very differently and more than once. And that's why I'm very convicted about my interpretation of the word, because the doctor says very many times, the craving never happens until after we have the first drink. Now, he doesn't say it as clearly as I'm about to, but what he means is it's a biological problem. It's a biological phenomenon. It's a biological mandate. It's a biological imperative. Choose your words. Once I take a drink, I will take a second and a third and a fourth, and I will not have intended to do that. That's the key. If you take a drink and you intended to get drunk and pass out, then that's your intention. That's your will. That's your desire. That's your decision. But if you take a drink and you intended to have one or two, and you pass out, or you go to jail, or you lose your job, or you have a car wreck, and you do that more than once or twice or three times, then that's indicative of an addiction. And I have the word compulsion there. I don't believe the big book uses that term in relationship to the body, but I think it's a wonderful term for us. Because once I take the drink, I take a second drink, not because I want it, not because I feel it, not because I'm even conscious of it. In retrospect, I can see that I was compulsed to do it. Despite all of my prior convictions and promises and memories and suffering, which never occurred to me. And that's, again, the problem of the mind. Now, we're artificially making the distinction between the body and the mind, of course, and the body and the mind and the will, of course. Those are all artificial because we're an integrated, holistic human being, and it's all going on at the same time. But for purposes of understanding the big book and attempting to understand and then have a new experience with addiction, we're parsing it out so that we can be clear about that. All right, so we're not going to go there. Where we are going to come back to is this body worksheet. I want you, if you have completed it or looked at and thought about and come to some experience with any one of those or all of them, I would want you to share, not on all of them, of course, there's five things there, it would take you 30 minutes to do that maybe, but on one of those items, and specifically what your experience is. When I start, I'm particularly interested for the group and for myself to have the process addiction people share. I'm looking for the vocabulary that expresses their experience, not their opinion, although that's okay too, but I'm really looking for experience that's parallel to what the doctor's opinion talks about with alcohol. It's very clear with substance. When I take the first drink, when I take the first drug, when I take the first bite, that's very clear. Couldn't be clearer. But process addiction, is that a thinking? Is that a feeling? Is that a memory? Is that an awareness? Is that an action? And I'm pretty confident the answer is yes to all of those. But I'd like to hear your personal experience if one of your addictions is a process addiction and you've done this work on it. The task at hand is to look at the body worksheet. The task at hand is to comment on your experience of losing control. Comment on your experience of what does powerless mean to you based on the work that you've done? What does no choice mean to you once you've done this work? It's not an academic, although you're welcome to ask academic questions, but I want to keep it experiential. What is your personal experience? What you know and what you think and what you feel and what your opinion is, those are all important. But with the focus on what is your actual experience?
I had a question. You mentioned the difference between, well, you didn't mention what the difference is, but you mentioned bad habit versus addiction. Can you give me an idea how you differentiate those two?
Sure. Somebody goes to college and they're in a fraternity. This is not my experience. I was in the monastery. But and they come and they've had just an awful lot of fun, and they get married to a person who is a lot of fun, and they've been drinking, and all of a sudden his job's in jeopardy. And he goes, oh, well, drinking's over with now. I've got to grow up. And he stops.
Okay.
That's a classic example. That's my basically son's example. In his sophomore year, he got a 502. And that's a drunk driving arrest. And I said, his mother and I said, well, we'll help you out with this one. But you know what's in our family, right? We'll pay all expenses. We'll get you out of it, whatever. But don't call us again.
Gotcha.
About that. And he never did because he never had to. He goes, oh, yeah, I need to straighten up.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, the food addiction part I've got, I understand how that fits. But I was thinking back to college and 20s and 30s, and alcohol was not, I didn't use it lightly. I think I used it because of social anxiety. And
yes,
and I intended to use it to self-medicate. And
that would be a classic example of an unhealthy habit, to self-medicate because of social anxiety. Now, it can develop into an addiction as I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Oh, no, it was a very helpful discussion for a lot of people. Thank you, sir.
I just wanted to share some of my instances where the body worksheet question two, when what happens when I indulge in this addiction, and list three specific examples. That's what you're looking for, something like that, right? Okay. Number one is I regularly ate all of my Halloween, Christmas, and Easter candy within 24 hours of getting it. This is food, obviously, sugar especially, starting at age 5.
All right. But when are you conscious of this? When are you conscious of it? You're eating too much or compulsively or losing control? When are you conscious of it?
I knew it wasn't normal at age 5.
You're not conscious at age 5. So you might know it, but you're not conscious until 7 or 8 years old, typically. So,
Come on,
let's get into consciousness.
When I was 9 or 10, I went to the Rose Parade with my dad. We went up to Pasadena to stay overnight in a motel before the parade. He bought me all this junk food and candy, and which I ate all of. I I had no choice. I just didn't have a choice. Once I started, I couldn't stop.
Okay. So, but what was your mental frame of mind, your emotional frame of reference when you were there 9 or 10 with your father and he brings you, and he's done this obviously regularly. Were you going to pace yourself? Were you going to eat a little bit and then save some for later or for tomorrow? What was your...
That was always my intention, but it never happened. And in fact, that night, anxiety was always a trigger for me. I just had that aha moment because I was a very anxious child. I used to lick my lips until I had sores around them when I was 7, 8 years old.
Anxious about what?
I was always scared of everybody, people, places, things, because my dad left when I was 4 and a half. So he was a part-time dad and we did all the fun stuff together, you know.
There's a lot of reasons,
I got so nauseous though, I threw up all night long.
Okay, well, but what happens after you have compulsed eating is just what happens.
It relieves my anxiety.
Well,
that's why I do.
You know, there's lots of reasons and lots of explanations, and some of it's true and some of it's not, but it's not relevant. What is relevant? You know, what you just said is, I was intending to eat a little bit or a lot, actually. But what happened was, what happened a lot, and I became aware that I was, again, I failed myself. I ate it all.
Right.
And I got sick and et cetera like that. And so the real issue here is, so because you had such an awful experience there at age 9 or 10 at the Rose Bowl, it never happened again, right?
Wrong.
Exactly. How many decades was it before you came into a 12-step program?
Oh, for that? 2000. This was, you know, I'm 55 years old. I've been in AA for 30 years, but OA, it took me until I was 10 years sober.
And see, the most important part is that part at 9 or 10, I was conscious. I was going to have a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. I didn't intend to eat it all, but I did.
Exactly.
Despite previous experiences of vomiting and nausea and embarrassment and all the rest of it.
Shame. Yeah.
And I'm assuming now that you could take that and rubber stamp dozens of instances.
Hundreds, probably. I have 9 months of abstinence, so that'll tell you.
There.
Yeah, how long I've been trying. So, yes.
That's it. That's the focus. Did you have any other comments or questions about that?
No, I just wanted to share that to see if anybody else might be helpful to someone else. So.
Well, it's right on the money. And it's the same way with alcohol. It didn't happen every time for me. It sounds like it was pretty regular with you as time went on. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, it brought me to 276 pounds. So yes.
And that's a whole discussion about suffering that has nothing to do with biology. It has a lot to do with sociology and psychology, doesn't it?
You bet.
So I am... like I'm guessing a lot of Al-Anon, ACA, CODA people having a tough time with the body thing.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, the will, I looked ahead, easy breezy, get A+ on that one. But the body, I'm having a real hard time.
So what's the trigger for you?
Well, I have worked the steps several times, and about 3 years ago, think I had a spiritual awakening. So I have to kind of go back before that, and then I can kind of sense a little bit, but it's almost
let's go back. Yes, I don't want to interfere.
Okay.
Because you're right on the beam here, but I want to put you even further back. I want you to go, why did you come to Al-Anon, for God's sakes?
Well, the first time I came to Alateen, because my mom went into rehab and she was a single parent and it was just the two of us. So it wasn't really a choice. So I worked the steps. I acquiesced that I was powerless, that kind of thing, you know, prayed only for, mm-hmm. I prayed only for understanding of his will and the power to carry it out, and kind of did that.
But then you came to Al-Anon.
And I did. I came back to Al-Anon as an adult.
I audited. Al-Anon. Did you come to Al-Anon?
I audited Al-Anon at times of my mother's crises. And I tried to qualify for any other program.
No. Tell me. You just said it. You're beginning to focus in now on the trigger, your mother's crisis. Tell me about that in terms of what was your response to your mother's crisis?
Amputation by distance for most of it.
Meaning what?
Just got away.
Okay, but that didn't take you to Al-Anon because you were...
No, what brought me to Al-Anon actually was more of a spiritual quest than a resolution for my relationship with my mom. That was a nice byproduct, but yeah. I mean, I came back a year before there was a major crisis. Okay. But no, this is like some people go and do yoga. I give back. I took a lot from this program. It saved my life.
Yes, absolutely wonderful comments, but I'm going to change the focus just a little bit. Tell me about your reaction to your mother's crisis or your mother's drinking. We're really looking at the trigger event of your mother's drinking and your reaction. Even the, you called it some form of surgery. What was it? When you cut off a limb.
I detach by amputation.
Amputation, yeah. And so that's our reaction.
But the in your book, the instead of quenching our thirst, that part of the phenomenon of craving that Silkworth talks about, having a real hard time because every time I think I'm kind of close to what that might be, it's really mind, it's not body.
Well, okay, you know, it may in fact not be your experience because on page 44, Bill says either or, in my terms, either or. My experience is both and. But he says if you have the experience of not being able to stop or the experience of not being able to stay stopped, you're probably an alcoholic. So it could be one or the other. Yeah.
Because I can definitely, that craving, it's kind of like I can imagine like, you know, heroin addicts talking about chasing the dragon.
Well, but see, you're not hearing me though. Craving is not what you just said it is. Craving is the fact that I take the second drink, not even thinking about it, not even wanting it, just taking it because I'm compulsed to do so. Did you ever take an action in a relationship that you didn't want to do?
Yes.
Because I'm trying to, I don't know the right word, but I'm trying to sort of lead you into it. There'll be other people on the call that are in Al-Anon that perhaps have maybe helpful words concerning that, but
yeah, I think the closest thing to that craving is once I start, you know, thinking that if I don't think out the possible outcomes of what could happen and what I'd have to do and what do I need to plan to do that and who does it depend on, once I start going down that rabbit hole, that's as close as I can come.
All right, here's
that phenomena of craving.
Here's my daughter's comment to me. Dad, your problem is drinking. She's 30 years in Al-Anon. My problem is thinking. Because once I start, and she doesn't say it the way you just did, but I love the phrase and the image, I go down the rabbit hole. It's dark, it's desolate, and it doesn't go anyplace.
Right. And it's really the poor me, another think.
Okay.
Because it's like the treadmill.
But you're really conscious and you're really smart. You were exposed to Al-Anon and you were exposed to Al-Anon and you had this awful experience. So you only did that once or twice, right?
Did the thinking thing? Oh God, no, it's my default.
It was a trick question. It was a trick question in the same way I was talking to the food addict.
Yep. Yes,
I know the answer.
No, it feels like that's it. for a long time, I referred to myself as an adult child of an alcoholic, and I can, but I choose not to think that way anymore. I think of myself as an adult child of a higher power.
Well, you can think anything you want, but if you want to have a refreshing experience with some, with a very short book that I read back in the late 80s, it was, I think, published in the early 80s. It's Dr. Kritzberg, Kritzberg, and it's The Adult Child of Alcoholic Syndrome. The key word in the title is syndrome. Mm-hmm. And it was the first book I'd ever exposed myself to. And he describes the personality that's developed, the profile of the personality in a house that has a practicing alcoholic, or in our case now, mental illness and PTSD would qualify. But in his vocabulary, he was talking about addiction. If you're raised in a house where there's an active addict, your personality is going to be quantifiable in a diagnostic manner. It's amazing. Okay. So it's not incorrect to say I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. I don't use that, even though that is my story. I happen to turn out to be an alcoholic. You just happen to be addicted to addicts, I'm assuming, if you're in Al-Anon.
Probably.
Not probably. What's your experience? Are you attracted to alcoholics?
Oh, yeah. Yes. But as you said, I'm pretty smart and not usually inebriated. So I make conscious choices. I'm aware.
Yeah, I think that's the benefit of early exposure to Alateen. My two daughters went to the Alateen program. They both liked it, and one graduated to AA and the other graduated to Al-Anon. My son, who went and didn't like it, he doesn't have any problems that we're aware of at this point. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So maybe the word is thinking. All right. But you've opened up Pandora's box, I hope. No.
My favorite. No, I love the mess.
for everybody else here that's a process addiction, we're looking for the vocabulary, not because we want you to get it correct, anybody who's sharing, but so that we can kind of like, oh, that works for me. I can identify with that. And I have something concrete now to kind of like connect to and identify with the doctor's opinion. And this is a rhetorical question for you and for everybody. Once you have the stimulus and you engage, do you ever lose control? There has to be a stimulus and you engage. Do you ever lose control, substance or process? If you lose control once or twice and you fix it, then that was just an unhealthy habit. And you're mature now and you can manage it. But if it happened more than three times, I'm pretty convicted. If it happens more than three times and the outcome is negative suffering and you continue to lose control, you're probably an addict in that area.
Working on the body, the physical craving from a Al-Anon control standpoint, the physical excitement you feel when you find a target, a mark, and
that's quite a term.
yeah. Which kicks into the thinking, you go into the process. You start with the open-ended question. Hey, how are you doing? What's going on? Responses, engagement, and you start.
In that sequence, what's the trigger?
The lust for power.
Okay, all right. Actually, that works for me, yeah. There's an empowerment.
People will just, heave power upon you. They give you the keys to the kingdom. You answer, ask some questions. You pretend like you, this wise, learned thinker. Well, it's all bullshit. Yet, it.
People want a hero. That's right. They want somebody to tell them what to do. That's right.
And then thinking about it, like, then we start believing our own bullshit. Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, maybe I am a hero. Maybe I am worthwhile. I told 27 people what to do this week. 26 of them listened to me. One didn't. Look where they're at.
There you go. Confirmation. Yes, and there should be a petition to the Pope.
And just it feeds itself more and more. And then when there's no one around who, as you were saying, needs my help, wants my help.
So do you have a specific example in mind that has sort of been the poster child for your craving experience?
Yes, a specific example being that the bullshit front I put up is very attractive to those women that come from alcoholic homes, have suffered.
We know, we know where you're going with that, but yeah. What's the specific trigger? You're in a room, you're in a bar, you're at a dance, you're at a birthday party. What's the trigger?
Pardon my French, I just want to see how bad I can fuck with this person. Like,
all right. So it's the thought. No, I mean, it sounds very, very twisted, by the way. I'll say that up front.
I'm aware. Part of the reason why I'm here.
Well, my daughter put it this way, all right? And she's been one of my teachers. My daughter said, when in college, when she would walk into a room of dance of her peers, there would be 100 people in there. She would survey the room, and she would pick out the one that brought the vroom vroom here. And she would go over to that person and begin talking. And inevitably, it was a alcoholic or an alcoholic in process.
So is it like recognize like? Are we just conditioned to find?
No, need recognizes solution. If I'm empty, I'm going to go to the faucet.
All right. Need recognized solution. All right, Herb, that gives me something to think about.
You tease out even that kind of like trying to get to the what's the trigger point connected to the similarity, the parallel with the first drink, and you were struggling a little bit, and that brought to mind my daughter's when she visually connected with somebody that set her up here. It was physical with her. Mm. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Herb, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, thanks.
I wanted to speak to the value of the timeline. I did not think I needed to do it. I thought I knew my story really well. And when I actually sat down and looked back, and this was inspired by the sharing that's gone on here. So I just want to honor all of you who are sharing.
Yeah.
The story and the history, the actual history are very different. It uncovered some things, one of which is, I didn't know this. I've been secretly proud of the fact that I didn't drink for 22 years, and I've been resting on those laurels and ignoring the fact that for the next 10 years after that, I went in and out of the program, stopped drinking for periods of time, but was not sober.
So how the timeline helped you to see that in what way?
It goes back to a question you asked at the very beginning, which is, well, why are you here? Why do you want to do this work at this time? And what got uncovered was I came here for you to teach me how to inoculate myself against my humanity. And if that didn't work, I wanted you to just take me through the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. And here's the worst part. So I could go back to drinking.
Yeah, sure.
And I didn't know that.
All right.
And so I am not even at step one yet. Well, it's the first part of the first step. It's admission.
Yep.
This is not stuff that I want to see. It's not comfortable. At the same time that I'm seeing this, I'm recognizing there's a grace in my life that is working. An example of that grace is sitting right next to me. This mm-hmm. is the best partner I've ever been with.
Yeah.
And the fact that she has stuck with me through my insanity is amazing to me. And it is, it's grace.
Oh, that's wonderful. Good. Thank you very much. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
My history of attempts is pretty simple, but I have one specific example, at least recently, that I think of, that I turn to pretty...
What addiction are we talking about?
I'm so sorry. Alcohol.
Okay.
It would be like in my basement apartment. I started drinking. This was before when I lived in a basement apartment by myself. I would take a couple shots. I would stop on the way home. I would get the alcohol, take a couple shots, and then I would set the timer. And then when the timer was close to going up, I would take another shot. And then I'd set the timer a little longer to make up for the time that I had skipped on the time. And then before I know it, you know, I'd be setting it longer and longer, and the intervals would somehow magically be getting shorter and shorter.
Why were you on the timer? That's very odd.
You know, to regulate my drinking. That's very odd.
Yes. Why were you trying to regulate your drinking?
Because I wasn't going to Are you being sarcastic?
Not one bit. I've never heard this before.
Are you serious?
Never once in 37 years.
I am unique. I'm telling my sponsor. No, I was on the timer because I didn't want to lose control. I didn't want to overdo it.
So you had an experience of losing control.
More than one.
And this was your method of managing your drinking.
One of many.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. Fail. It's very creative. It's actually quite practical. How did it work?
Horribly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the point, you see. That's really it's such a great example. That's exactly the point of the craving exercise. I mean, it couldn't be any clearer. I actually was conscious of losing control. I set up a timer. I literally set the timer. I'm committed to the timer. And I started manipulating the timer. That's perfect.
So then I have a question. It's perfectly setting up. I'm glad you think so, because here's my little question then. I have a very hard time with this concept of no choice, because it feels very irresponsible.
Wait a minute. You didn't have a choice. You kept changing the timer.
But I had to be conscious in order to change set the time. I'm not trying to be cute either.
No. Your ego is protecting itself because you're very, very self-controlled, right? Wrong. You're very self-willed, very strong willpower, right? Wrong. Because it failed, girl. It didn't work. It was overridden every time by your biology, not by your decision. Your decision was the mask that said, I'm in charge of this. I'm just going to change it. Wrong answer. You were compulsed, biologically driven by your biochemistry. Well, at least this is my interpretation of it. How does that resonate with you?
Boom. I mean... Driven, but you said something about...
But see, this is such a great example setting us up for next week. The problem with the mind is it does exactly what you're doing right here, thinking that, in fact, you're thinking. Thinking, in fact, that you're... I mean, it's really clear to you that this was an absolute, perfect, legitimate explanation. And now I've just put dynamite underneath it and blew it away.
Because I feel like it's irresponsible of me to view it that way. Do you see what, like it's a very circular?
Yeah, no.
It keeps me right.
Defend yourself as long as you can.
What'd you say? What was that?
Defend yourself as long as you can, Custer.
Yeah, like hold on to the little raft as I'm being drugged by the boat, right?
Exactly.
Can I ask a quick question? I wrote it so I wouldn't forget. When it comes to craving, I was having a very hard time, and I'm probably not the first, but grasping that concept of the Webster's definition versus the, and I think what I finally realized, and I'm wondering if it's, I guess it's possible, but if it's been an experience that people have shared, where I'm pretty sure that for me, the Webster definition of craving, and I looked it up just, you know, part of the exercise, but I had to check again just to make sure I read correctly. That seems more to me like I want chocolate.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
Okay. Because for me, craving, I think of like a ravenous, like fiending drug addict.
Oh, no. Yeah. No. That would be a misinterpretation. No.
Okay.
Craving is I desire, I have an inclination for, I'm thirsty, I want a drink of water.
Webster craving.
Yeah, Webster craving. But your experience is the absolute doctor's opinion craving.
Okay.
Where you were forced to manipulate even your own thinking about manipulation.
Yeah, and many other things. There's a long list.
Well, up to this very present moment, as we're talking about it, you actually believed your story about it.
Because it would be irresponsible not to. It's like the first time my sponsor had told me to set aside, you know, like, what if you just weren't worried about, you know, your dad for one day? Well, then who would protect him? I say, as he's 17 states away, that would be irresponsible of me.
Well, that's a soft word. I would say delusional of you.
To set it aside. To think I had a choice.
Yeah, no. Well, sure, that too. Yeah, but that you had any ability to protect your father 17 states away.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. No, that's great. That's great. That's a great example. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Angie, please.
Hi, Herb. When you were talking earlier and you used compulsion with craving,
yeah,
would you say that those two words were synonymous with each other? As in the doctor's opinion.
My instinct says no, but I'm not sure why. I'd have to re-look the Webster's Dictionary of compulsion, but somehow, and it might very much so, as I'm thinking about it while we're talking about it, because there's a underlying biological drive to compulsion. Yes. No, I'm lining up with that. I think they might be very close to synonyms. Yes.
Okay. And then I really loved the need recognizes the solution.
Yeah, that was first time I've ever said it that way. Yeah.
One of the things that I've always heard in Al-Anon since I got here was the rocks in our head matches the holes in theirs.
Yes.
Or the holes in their head matches the rocks in ours.
Yes.
Yeah. One way or the other.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, but I really like the way you said it too.
Yeah.
But I thought someone else might find that beneficial. And I love to find a mark.
Yeah.
That was awesome because that's so true.
That's pretty brutal.
and to me, the compulsion to find that mark is my addiction.
Yeah.
I have to have someone else to focus on so that I don't have to focus on me.
Yes.
If I have to focus on me and what's going on with me, then that's not comfortable.
No, it gives me a sense of value when I focus on them and I can contribute and get all that praise.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Even also, praise from myself. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It also just, like, I get this burning need to fix things for other people and help them with their problems.
Right.
To such an extent that I don't even breathe sometimes. Like I'm holding my breath over someone else's problem.
Yeah.
And so that's
kind of a catch 22. I mean, even in step 12, you see, that would be a catch 22. I have actually to balance myself in that conundrum. There's a lot of people suffering. I have a gift to help them to reduce suffering, but I can't work 24/7, even though even in 24/7, I wouldn't make a dent. So there's a balance here where, and that's where codependency would come in terms of a conversation for sure.
Right. And that's where it comes in when you're sponsoring too, to say, you know, I can't care about your program more than you do.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's deep wisdom, quite frankly. If people can hold that stance, I cannot want it for you any more than you want it for you. Otherwise, I'm in trouble.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Otherwise, I'm practicing my disease.
And enabling them, which is crippling them. Yeah, no, that's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm abstinent at the moment, 50 days.
Wonderful, wonderful. So it's a recent memory then, the doctor's opinion and the craving. What would be an example that, let's say, 90 days ago you experienced?
Like I fell off the wagon at Christmas.
What is it? Fell off the wagon.
I fell off the wagon. I busted. Yeah.
Well, what does it mean? No, let's get specific. Tell us what happened.
It means that once I started eating sugar or flour,
had you been abstinent at that point?
It had been over 90 days.
90 days, a long, good stretch. And you were very happy with it. And you took a bite of something. And what happened?
Oh, I was off. I was off and running. And
you mean you lost control?
I definitely lost control.
Yeah.
Couldn't think straight. Was more focused on the food at Christmas dinner than I was on the people.
Yeah, well, and see, everything after the first bite is just story.
Yeah.
The first bite that set up the chain of events that were, I'll go with the other word that we use, compulsion.
Yes.
There, and it wasn't like it was a mental decision or emotional commitment. It was like you were out of control.
Yeah, definitely out of control.
That's it.
Even when, like, all the years of living with my husband when he was actively drinking, I never connected the dots of my eating in relation to trying to stop him drinking.
Yeah.
Because I did everything I could possibly do to stop him drinking. And in fact, I used to ask him the same thing over and over and over again.
Of course.
I couldn't even control that.
Yeah.
Nope. Wow.
Yep. No,
but I'm 62, Herb. I don't want to eat anymore. Like, you know, it's bad. I think, my God, I'm going to be dead soon. And
dead sooner if you don't get it managed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I use a wheelchair. So I can't afford to be heavy because my arms are my legs.
There you go. The motive. You have all these motives and they don't help you much, do they?
No, they didn't help me at all. Not at all.
So glad you mentioned that part.
Yeah, well, that's the craziness of it. And actually, it's not my disability that bothers me. It's getting overweight and having fat and not being able to buy clothes.
But that won't stop you.
That's insane thinking.
Well, no, it won't stop you though. See, that's the thing. All of that objective motivation and knowledge will not stop you once you take the first bite, despite all of the collapses you've had and the experiences that you've had and the resolutions that you have and the program that you know, you're going to take the second bite and you're going to lose control again.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah.
So when I get abstinent, all that goes away, all that craving and all the thought, all the food thoughts, they sort of leave me.
They do until they don't, because 50 some days ago you relapsed.
Yes, that's right.
So that's why it's so relevant what we're going to do next week.
Awesome.
Why do you start again? With all that motivation, why do you start again? That's a rhetorical question.
Yes,
setting
yes.
us up for next week.
Yes.
Yeah. And you said crazy. And we'll look at that word, insanity, because it's the key word in that whole thing. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I believe anyway that I married an alcoholic. So, I mean, where was my brain? My dad was an alcoholic. So I unconsciously entered into a relationship with my father, really, in a way, because that's what my husband
was. There's lots of psychological explanations, but the one that we just came up with tonight is that you had a thirst and you found a drinker.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and I've been craving love. It comes back to love for me, I think.
Well, I'm sure that you hold that thought until we get to unmanageability, and I think it'll make a lot more sense, that word, in a much different context. Yep.
Yep. I hope so. Thank you, Herb.
Thanks very much. No. Very much. Okay. You guys are building on one another. It's really, really wonderful tonight.
My main thing is, you know, I started to realize my father was a crack cocaine addict for many years in the house, and my real father, who left at 4, was an alcoholic, and I got into Al-Anon, and then my son was smoking a lot of marijuana, and, you know, there was physical altercations, and I really needed to go to Al-Anon. And so, actually, my thing is kind of like, I get the reaction of I get a workup, I get shortness of breath, and, you know, I need to say something. I'm gonna tell you what I think. And this is the problem. I mean, actually,
What stimulates that? No. Thank you. It's a very different approach. What stimulates the thought, I need to tell you what I think?
Well, actually, in this group, I'm getting real triggered over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I hear kind of like this. There's like it's like a dishonesty, and there's like a underlying, like, because living with an addict, it's not anything here, but living with an addict and hearing all the lies, all the dishonesty, all the mental masturbation of the whole thing, it's like, it just really gets me worked up, and it's like, I just like, oh God, you know, and that's my process. That's the process that I go through, and there's an injustice there.
What's the trick? No, I'm hearing the sort of the surroundings. Can you kind of zero in on what the trigger is?
The trigger is injustice, and like mm-hmm. you said, not the first bite, but kind of the first slight.
Nice.
Like you said it's the first bite. And for me, I kind of, when you just said that, I like, you know, for me, it's the first slight.
I love words. That's great. I love it. It works really nicely. Yeah. No, you're triggered by the first slight or whatever. And that has probably a very broad definition for you.
Exactly. And it comes with the shame, and it comes with the whole,
what's your history of controlling your reaction?
Not good.
That's a bit of an understatement, isn't it?
But, and with my children too, like, I don't want to be that way, right? I work
on the
APA, Al-Anon.
No,
I don't want to say, I've said some so hurtful things to my
but kids. But see what you're experiencing now. So don't try to solve it right now at this moment.
Yeah.
Embrace the words, no choice.
Yeah.
No. Don't just say yes. Breathe that in. I'm experiencing a history of no choice.
Yeah.
All right. This is not in the big book.
Yeah.
But when you really have an experience of no choice, the only feeling is I'm screwed.
Yeah. That's true.
On my own power. There's no program that's going to help you.
No.
There's no therapist that's going to help you.
No.
On your own power, you're defeated. And the only action here is to implode in full surrender, whatever that means. And you can't even do that. because you don't have the choice to do that.
And I forget that I have all the, my higher power. I forget
that, of course,
12 steps. I forget, you know, and it's like, I've
got, well, that's going to be the topic of next week and the couple weeks after that. When we look at the mind, what's wrong with us? We're reasonably intelligent and fairly educated, all of us. What's wrong with us? But and the lady beforehand from England said, "We're, you know, that's crazy." Yes, literally. In the Big Book's definition, though, because the Big Book has a very unique definition of insanity also. And you could look at that in page 37 if you want to, you know, sort of do a little cheating on it. Because right there in two or three lines, Bill uses the term insanity and then defines it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And the thing is, I mean, am I getting the adrenaline rush? Because short as a breath, I mean, I'm getting something out of, like, you know.
It's great for you to be asking the questions, but right now it's not relevant.
Okay.
Because what it is, what we're embracing is the experience that you lose control. Despite the consequences, you lose control. And despite the fact that you have a history of losing control and not wanting to, you lose control.
Exactly.
That's it. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Every one of you have given us a little nuance on this whole thing about no choice. That's great. Thanks very much.
What's coming up for me now is that I'm freaking out about the fact that I've come in, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a food addict, sex addict, under earner, and all I can think about now is the process of my stinking thinking that I also can't control. This whole process addiction is a whole new world for me. And I'm really sort of upset because I feel like I've lost a great deal of my life from being spaced out. Yeah. I don't know where I go or what happens, or, and I'm trying to see where's the trigger. But there's times where people are like, "Didn't you see all this stuff? You know, I don't remember things." I had, like, that girl said something about a brownout, a blackout with their thinking. And
I use the term whiteout.
Yeah, well, whatever out, it was out. I mean, I just don't, you know, anyway, I'm really looking at this. And now I'm researching ADD. I'm like, I need medication. What, I'm like, I don't know what the,
Well, I mean, if you have any suspicion at all, talk to a professional to do an evaluation. Because it's not something that you deal with because you want to. Yeah, I have three grandsons, one in each of my three adult children's families, 20, 17, 12, all different families, all on ADHD medication. Because it's in my genes.
Well, anyway, at least you've got me thinking about something.
See, now, mission accomplished. I'm so glad that we're stirring you up. Not because you're stirred up. That you know, that's going to be difficult right now. I can hear the pain of it and the sort of the uncomfortableness of it. But it's the beginning of opening it up and kind of identifying. You can't fix a broken ankle unless you diagnose it.
Right. And also, I forget so easily. I mean, all this stuff, I've been in 30 years in AA, and I'm like, I feel like some of this I'm learning for the first time, but it's like,
yes,
really, you know this, but you just, it's like, you definitely have, I'm really, I have to be reminded every day. Right. It's a daily reprieve. And this 10-step thing, I'm like, oh my God, all these years I wasn't doing it. I thought I had to write out this whole thing. It was like too much trouble. Now I just review my actions at the end of the day. And yeah, thank you.
No, it's wonderful. You're hello, you're waking up.
Again.
Well, yes, actually. Yes.
So what I do, I'll like just put off and avoid anything crucial that needs to be done. I mean, I have enough recovery where I don't do it to a point where my life falls apart. And then I get off when things like build up to a point where I can't ignore them. I get off on rushing around and like doing everything. So
is that the trigger then? I get off on, that's a synonym for me of an adrenaline rush.
That's part of it, certainly.
Yeah.
That's part of it. Another thing I do, and I mean, I had a bunch of things going on, but I can play, I can be on my phone, I can be on social media, I can be playing so games on my phone for hours.
I understand, you've got a good context now. Did you zero in on something specific that you want to share with us about the parallel with the craving that the doctor's opinion talks about?
Well, I'll pick up my phone and I'll swear I'll only be on for 15 minutes or half an hour. And sometimes I'll even set a timer and I'll blow right by that. And I've done that many times.
Yeah. That would be time management, as I understand it, in UA is one of the issues. So yeah, that would be exactly right. And despite the fact that you're conscious of it, you don't like it, you've set a timer, you're attempting to manage it, you're not able to manage it.
But then other times,
yep,
I am able to. That's what's weird. I understand that.
I could go home when I promised after two drinks. I could do that regularly, but occasionally I didn't.
Got it, okay.
Yeah, it's perfect, right on the money.
Great, yep. Thank you, Herb, I appreciate you.
Thank you. So kleptomania is stealing something just because you get a thrill out of stealing it, I'm assuming. Getting away with it.
When I did it the first time, somebody came up, it was, you know, but when I was sick and they said something about, what are you doing? I was writing down the price of stuff because I was moving to a new place and financially insecure, not having much money.
Wait. Too much story.
So, okay. So it was a resentment. Oh,
wait. Did you steal it or not?
Yeah, I took a tooth.
You took
a toothpaste.
All right, you took it. And after that, did you steal again?
Oh, yes.
Did you make a decision not to steal again and you stole again?
I couldn't make any decisions when I weighed 65 pounds and was drinking alcoholically.
A lot of excuses and a lot of reasons for your behavior. Then they may all be very valid, but they're irrelevant. You see, you're so invested in your story, you can't hear the focus. It took you a long time to say, I want to talk about kleptomania. And great, now you're talking about it. And the only issue here, the only issue is, when you start stealing, are you able to stop?
Before I got in recovery, no.
That's the point. That's it. That's the whole point of this conversation.
But when I'm when I'm writing out body stuff.
Well, wait, no, you're what do you think is going to happen? It's about when I start, I cannot stop. The doctor's opinion is it has something to do with the body. All you have to do is understand that that's the behavior. The explanation isn't really important. The experience is once you start, you cannot stop. That's all. You don't need to explain it. You don't even need to agree with the doctor's opinion. The question is powerlessness. The question is no choice. When I started
at the time when I was in active addiction years ago, yes, I had no choice about those three things.
There you go. Yeah. But then when you get into recovery, of course, recovery puts you in a position of neutrality. Because then craving is not an issue if in fact you don't use. And so then the real question is, well, why did you regularly use if in fact it created embarrassment and suffering? But that's a question we'll address next week.
Okay, well, I'll just hold it then.
No, you're doing great. I'm glad you got to the, no, I've never talked to a kleptomania before, and I'm glad that you revealed what was going on, but the issue is not your story. The issue is not the consequences. The issue is not all your other addictions or your feelings about it. It's all irrelevant conversation. The only issue is, once I started, I could not stop. That's the only absolutely bullseye central topic for us today right now. Once I start, I cannot stop.
The way that I view that is once I take a sip of a drink, I couldn't stop. Once I took a bite of something with sugar, I couldn't stop.
Right.
But I didn't go, I wasn't planning on stealing. It was just happened. I was grabbing at everything, trying to find the answer to what was wrong with me.
Stay with us.
I will.
Because right now, I mean, I'm not sure I'm the only one, but you have a blind spot. You just named alcohol and food, and then you said, but I don't see how it applies to my kleptomania. When I start, I cannot stop. It's kind of like, yep, you can't see it. It's a blind spot right now. It's the absolute same thing as you described it.
Okay, I'm trying to, it's so clear to me how the food thing started.
No, it's not about starting. It's not about starting. It's about what happens when you start. It's not about starting. It's about what happens after you start. When I steal something, then I'm in a repetition of stealing beyond my ability to control it.
But my main one I'm concerned about right now is overeating, compulsive overeating.
Sure.
And I know that when I start, I can't stop.
Right.
But I also know that I had, for instance, a day today that when I start, I can't stop. Then I get into these realms of just so upset, crying all day.
Yeah.
Because I can't remember my life. I can't remember.
But those are all other issues, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Because the only, and I want to keep it really simple.
Right.
I don't mean to short circuit anybody, but there's only one experience here. When I start, I lose control. Is that your experience with food?
Yes, very much.
There it is.
So.
Despite all of your other knowledge and programs.
I guess my question then is, will I at a later time in your program be able to get into where my life has been?
Step four, we'll do that in overwhelming detail.
Which I'm in the midst of right now with my sponsor, horrible time with.
Meaning what?
I can't remember.
Oh, well. All right. Well, there's a gift in there. So you don't have any resentments because you forget about it, right?
Oh, no, I have resentments.
So you got a pretty good memory then. Okay. Well, we'll get to the fourth step when we get to the fourth step.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Just stay with us right now. I think you're having a good experience with the workshop.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Absolutely.
All right.
I'm becoming aware of another addiction that I've had since I was 9-10 years old, lip and cheek biting.
Okay.
And even as a kid, like, I've had dentists tell me, like, what are these sores in your mouth? And I bite till the point that they're sores. And it has both the craving that's in the Big Book described, as well as within the website.
Once you start, you cannot stop. But what is the trigger for it?
That's what I'm saying. I have, like, with alcohol and drugs, I get it. I have no idea. Like, I will be doing it when I'm bored, when I'm obviously anxious, mad, even if I'm, like, curious, like watching a movie or.
Yeah. But, you know, behavior, it sounds like a behavioral tic to me.
Yeah.
I'm not a psychologist, but it sounds like a behavioral psychologist might be able to help you with that within 5 or 10 sessions, because it's a behavioral problem. And I think you're right, it's connected to stress and stress reduction. I mean, it's obviously a very unhealthy way of dealing with stress reduction because it creates its own stress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Yeah, no, you're welcome. The 12-step program will help you address some underlying issues, but that's a physical issue that probably needs professional help with a medical doctor or a psychologist. Pardon?
I can't stop, you know, I'm working with that stuff, very, very new, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it 100%. Yeah.
I'll take it up with my therapist. Thank you.
Actually, if you have one, that'd be terrific. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much. And then report back to us, because that's really interesting. I've never heard that before. Okay.
Will do. Thanks.
I just wondered what your thoughts were. life was unmanageable with no program, to say the least. But one thing that really, the thing that really like broke me, and I told myself I'm done and I'm not going to do this anymore, was the my inability to control my emotions. And I mean anger specifically, but I think it was emotions in general, because like I would hear, I heard things like, why don't you just not do that? Or maybe the thing like you say, like, we know better, but we can't do better.
Right.
Or like, one more word out of you and you're out of here. Well, guess what?
Right.
You know how many times I had to pop off one more time?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if I was put in that situation,
that's your,
and
so that's your addiction where you couldn't stop once you started.
Yeah. And it was, and when I did the work and the writing on it, I equated it to like 0 to 200 miles an hour. There was definitely,
right.
I was definitely powerless and there was definitely no choice. There was a complete inability to control it.
Do you have a name for that? Is it just emotions or is it anger specifically?
If it's not anger specifically, it's a derivative of anger.
Right.
It's anger based, as if something would be fear based.
Yeah. Did you do any body work around anger?
In this session. No, you know, I mean, I'd done the steps like 5 years ago now, and my life is so different.
I guess you didn't take to heart my set aside suggestion.
Well, I'm not speaking about my inability to control it today. I'm speaking about it before I did the work.
Well, okay, but it's on your mind now as an issue.
Well, I just wondered if it was like basically relative to almost...
Of course.
To any of these other types of addictions.
Sounds right to me. Sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I just wanted to share it because I felt like, well, it's something that really resonated with me. And then what I heard because of the experiences I had with my inability and what just got me like hook, line, and sinker, just the way I've always said it, was when you're disturbed, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
Because I also would see myself in a group of people and no one else was bothered and only I was.
Yeah.
And it was like, holy shit. I was like,
see, there's
many
people in the room right now that can't identify with the anger part, but if they would substitute the word fear, they would identify immediately with all of the dynamic that you just described. And then the people who don't do that could maybe identify with shame in the same way that you just described your anger. And I think that would probably encompass 100% of the people that have some primary reaction of either anger or fear or shame. Those are the basic biological survival instincts. Yeah.
I mean, it went on for a long time and I didn't know how to fix it. And it just turned out that someone that did this work had all these answers that I had never heard. And they're the one that said that.
Yeah.
And then that, and so that is what like has changed everything for me is because someone did this work and they were willing to help me with my problems. And then look at me today, you know, like I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I don't have those issues anymore because I'm not trying to do this on my own anymore, you know?
Right. No, that's it.
I mean, that's where you're headed.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's right. No, I guess. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You bet.
I get the alcohol part and where I'm powerless. I didn't think I had an issue with my prescription medicine because I have chronic pain and I use a natural and a prescribed nerve medicine to help with my back pain. And I don't feel powerless around it. Well, because my sponsor... Because when I started my steps, I just was clear with my sponsor. Oh, you know, I have an issue with alcohol and I want to let you know I do take pain medicine.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, well, we're going to have to deal with that.
Meaning what?
I don't know. Like,
is she a doctor?
No.
Is she a pharmacist?
No.
Is she a psychiatrist?
No.
It's none of her business.
Thank you. Because it's been like kind of stalling out my process.
No, it's none of her business.
Okay.
You're dealing with your alcohol problem, right?
Yes.
And you're using your medication as prescribed.
Yes.
You don't lose control.
No.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you. That was my...
It's a case closed, black and white from my standpoint. There's an awful lot of prejudice and ignorance in the room. All right? And she's probably a good person, well-intentioned, but she may just not have a large enough perspective here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for bringing it up. That's a great topic.
I'm looking at the ways that I lived in the denial that I was controlling the food. I became bulimic. My first bulimic experience was at the age of 11.
Is that under eating or overeating?
No, I was overeating. Yeah. I was overeating, but to try to control the overeating,
yeah,
I taught myself to purge.
Yeah, got it.
And I would purge. I would overeat and purge, and then I would feel. But the crazy thing was that the more I purged, the more I went to overeating. Okay. Like it just was, like you said, it just wasn't working.
Right.
What I realized that underlying all of this is the, I don't know, it sounds crazy, just sounds crazy, but it's the need for chaos in my life. When things are quiet and normal and calm, I get like that restless feeling inside of me.
Okay.
And now I'm going to create chaos.
So serenity is the trigger.
Right. But I want serenity.
That's a conundrum. If in fact serenity is your trigger, that's, we pray for serenity. So you're in deep shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't want the serenity?
Well, I have no idea.
But I do want it because I can't live with this chaos.
I'm just helping you put words to what you're saying. And that is, where do you lose control?
When I have serenity.
Well, no, I understand that's sort of the prompter, but when do you lose control? Control of what?
I lose control.
Addiction's about losing control.
So I know I lose control over the food. I have no problem.
No, not talking about that.
So I lose control.
What happens when you manufacture just a little bit of chaos?
I get this rush feeling. I do not explain it any other way.
Wait, no, wrong answer. Do you create more chaos?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any control over the chaos you create?
No.
There you go.
Wow. So I can't stop creating the chaos.
That's what you're saying. I'm just repeating back to you.
No, I'm saying that I keep creating the chaos. And the more chaos I create, the more chaos I create. And I can't get out of that trap. It's a trap.
And it is a trap. That's right. And we'll take a look at it more deeply when we do the work on the mind.
Well, that's so painful to hear that, you know?
It's painful. Yes.
And I'm creating so much chaos and unmanageability in my own life.
Yes.
And I have a beautiful life that I'm just not enjoying.
Yes. The issue here is the food addiction. All right. Not the abstinence. The food addiction. And you said, once I start, I cannot stop. But now you've stopped. Right. Yes. Yeah. So that's a good thing, but your experience.
It's a grace from God. It just happened in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. So you just need to breathe in and breathe out and take direction and get help from wherever help is available to help manage your life and manage your business to the best of your ability. Because people in alcohol or drug addiction, they go to a hospital for 30 to 90 days to deal with what you're experiencing in detox.
Right.
Yeah. parallel that. Yeah, it's every bit of a drug that you're detoxing from, and you were narcotized and now you're thawing out.
Yeah.
I want to remind you that you have a couple weeks now to solidify the work that you did, and maybe you got some traction in our discussion tonight, which was actually quite specific in a lot of variety ways that might help you get an experience with your own addiction from a body standpoint, from a craving standpoint, from when I start, I cannot stop standpoint. We're moving on. And the relevant question is, why can't I stay stopped? Now, it may be that you have long abstinence and you have to go back to a memory of when you were wanting to stop and couldn't stop, assuming that you had that experience. The real key is, what were you thinking or feeling aware of a minute or two just before you relapsed? If you had made a decision to stop and you had stopped, for a day, a weekend, a week, a month, whatever the time period is, even a year or two, if you had stopped, intentionally stopped, and intended to stay stopped, and you started again, 1 or 2 minutes before you picked up or engaged in the behavior or the substance, what were you thinking, feeling, aware of, conscious of? What were you aware of, conscious of, within that 1 to 2 minutes before you relapse? Because that's the critical point that we'll be looking at. Now, of course, we're going to spend lots of time unpacking the big book sections. We're looking at the entire section is 23 to 43. The part that I'm going to review with you next Tuesday is 23 to probably 33 or 34, and then go on from there. So we'll take it in bites that we can consume and digest and talk about. It's going to be very experiential, even though it's the Tuesday is going to be somewhat academic in a couple of weeks when we unpack the material. And you're welcome to look at the mind worksheet. It's similar to the body worksheet. It's not a test. It's a prompter to bring you into specific experiences so that you can connect to it, as I've made an effort to get people to be very, very clear and specific about their experiences, not the general big story and the context and the feelings in it, but staying really specific into the questions in that mind worksheet. All right. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.